Now, Brother Van Gelderen and I, some people will say, you know the Van Gelderens. Well, I have met them. I met John, I say, on the revival road. By that I mean this. During the period, and I'm still on it, where I was seeking more to know more about New Testament Christianity for myself. And I call that being on the revival road. There's a lot of people on the revival road. The Lord's opening our eyes to things. And I met John along that way, and we are friends. He also lives in Michigan. Sort of. Like an evangelist lives anywhere. He's never there. But anyway, these books I should point out, one of them is called The Revival Journey. And in this book, I like the way it's laid out. It gives you basic truths that lead to the abundant life. Both in the individual Christian and in the local church, and yet it is organized kind of the way it happens to most people, where they start by thinking, is this really all there is? Is this really the Christianity I read about in the Bible? And moves you down. But it's very interesting. He told me about it before it was finished. And I love the plan. I love the plan. And I still love it now that it's a finished book. And I did read it before it was published. As you'll see, I wrote the foreword. So, you know, I don't compliment a book I haven't read. But it is an outstanding book. Been out a couple years. Then Friendship with the Holy Spirit. A lot of the abundant life has to do with our daily relationship with the third person of the Trinity. I heard John preach this as a sermon. Then he expanded it as a book, but he didn't expand it too much. It's a short book. Don't you like short books? Nice short one. But it makes it very practical about walking in the Spirit day by day, and you may well want to look it over and see if that's something you might want to take. Now for our revival moments, we have been spending a little time in each service looking over revival, what is taught in the Bible about it, and then into the revivals that are all over the history of the world. And of course, we're just barely touching it. You know what I've done? I've actually summed up a seminary course, a whole semester, in about 6 minutes a night. So I tell you, we're not being very complete. But that's the reason for the paper, and we've already given a few notes, but I want to put something together tonight at this juncture. We were talking last night about the Second Great Awakening, its rise and its fall. And I am tempted to ask someone if they knew how it was the Second Great Awakening came about in the 1790s. But I'm not going to ask that question because that kind of a thing is very discouraging. That's like a pastor getting up and saying, how many of you remember what I preached last Sunday? I'm going to tell you that it works all kinds of negative thoughts into your mind. So I'm going to assume you just look smart when you look at me and I'll pretend you remember. Okay, but the way it rose up was concerted prayer all over the United States. As Christian people were very concerned about the state and the direction of the country. And you know, God answered the prayer with the longest national revival in modern times, 50 years, basically 1795 to 1845. But you know, that's not the only time concerted prayer has brought not just individual, not just family, not just church, but regional or national revival, not the only time. The next big revival is sometimes called the Third Great Awakening, but more commonly called the Prayer Revival. In the 1850s, are you following the chronology here? A lot of pre-Christian people who knew a lot about revival by experience and by the scriptures were concerned because the churches were flat, churches were cold, the churches were back where they ought not to be. So there was a movement in the United States and somewhat in Canada to organize prayer groups to pray for another revival. Now they began to see something in 1857. It was up in Hamilton, Ontario. The folks in Ontario say it was the only great revival Canada ever saw. I don't know if that's really true, but they say that with a sad face. And it was a man and wife, a medical doctor and his wife, who were from New York State in the revival prayer movement. They were up there and they gave lectures on the need for revival, on the promises for revival, and on prayer. And they had some prayer meetings, and you know what? They broke out into a huge revival that the secular paper said, this is a revival of apostolic proportions. That's what they called it, with great numbers of people coming to Christ. In the States, people were thinking, well, it looks like God's starting to answer. Now a famous man, Jeremiah Lamphere, He was part of the prayer movement. Something had happened in our country during these days of prayer, and it was an economic collapse. Did you know that sometimes bad news is good news for Christians? If we had been back there in the days of Ahab and Jezebel, and you and I had been talking about how awful it was that we hadn't had any rain for a few years, and it brought drought, of course that was drought, but it brought economic collapse to the country. If Elijah got in on that conversation, he would smile and say, yeah, I know about that. I prayed for it. Because the economic collapse brought a revival to Israel. Remember that? Well, in 1857, they had the panic of 1857. We're talking about the Wall Street collapse of the stock market and all that kind of thing. That's the old way of referring to a recession or depression. They call it a panic. I think that's a pretty good word. But there was a panic. And Lamphere in New York City, just a layman, decided that he would announce prayer meetings at their church on Fulton Avenue at noon so businessmen could come down for prayer. Thought it might be a good evangelistic tool and was part of the prayer for revival movement. So we know the story and we know the date. I don't remember it. But on a certain day, they announced the first one. And I understand at the beginning of the noon hour, he showed up and one other guy. Then at 12:30, there were two more. They had prayer and decided that they would do it every day. So they had it the next day. And all I'm going to tell you, within 2 weeks, there were hundreds of people in prayer meetings at noon all across New York City. And then before long, thousands. And people were getting converted at the prayer meetings. It wasn't a preaching service. I know people who have made something out of that, and it should not be properly made. You know, the revival that happened without preaching, not exactly. During the prayer revival, the people said, we've had a lot of preaching. We know what we need to do. We just need to do it. And I tell you what, it was a thorough revival. 1857. The year 1858, that revival permeated the United States in such a way that I didn't get a chance to do this week. If I am in a city that was settled in 1858, if I have time, I'll go down to one of the old churches, one of the old Congregational or Methodist or Presbyterian or Baptist churches, and see if I can look at any of their records from 1858. You'd be amazed how many old churches have had a fire and all the records are gone. But the ones that have a record, nearly always, there is recorded a great revival throughout 1858, resulting in large numbers of baptisms and converts being brought into the church all over the country, absolutely all over the country. Now, the prayer revival led to something else. On your sheet, the next one, I call it the era of mass evangelism. But to tell you the truth, you may know we got into the Civil War in just a couple of years. When we entered into the Civil War, Christian organizations decided to evangelize the troops. The YMCA, which at that time had nothing to do with basketball or swimming, it was an evangelistic organization, Young Men's Christian Association, formed something called the U.S. Christian Commission. And they sent evangelists to the troops to pass out gospel tracts and New Testaments and win people to the Lord. One of their volunteers was a young guy by the name of D.L. Moody, who was revived during the 1858 period there. It's amazing how many were. And so much work was done. Matter of fact, I read a secular history years ago that said after a Civil War battle, if you went onto the battlefield, what you normally found was bodies, and also the battlefield was strewn with testaments. I've been in more than one museum from the Civil War where they would have a New Testament with a bullet in it. Behind glass, where some man who had been in the service said, my testament saved my life. It was in my pocket. And that was North and South, happened all over. Now, Ken Burns didn't tell you that about the Civil War, but there were 300,000 men, counting North and South, converted during the Civil War. And it affected our country afterwards, and I'm not taking the time, but I can tell you how. But after the Civil War, we entered right into the era of mass evangelism, where churches organized to reach their city. And evangelists were raised up who could capture the public mind. Sam Jones, D.L. Moody, J. Wilbur Chapman, others who were As a matter of fact, Dr. Bob Jones Jr., I heard him say the end of the era of mass evangelism was about World War I. He told a group of us preachers, he said, during World War I, I traveled with my dad, who was at the tail end of the era of mass evangelism. At that time, at any given time, there were at least a dozen major metropolitan areas with an area-wide evangelistic crusade going on. And I'm talking about big places like Minneapolis. At any given time, there were at least 12 big cities being reached. Now back to my story here. But that wasn't the only time. I got to tell you this, then I'll be quiet. I have a section there called 20th Century Revivals, which I will talk about tomorrow night. But they were preceded by something. In the 1890s, certain Christian leaders got a burden to pray and ask people to pray for a worldwide revival as the new century came on. Have any of you ever heard about this? As the 1900s came on, they were praying that there would be a revival among God's people all over the world. Moody at the Northfield Conference, year after year. The Keswick Convention in England, year after year. I found an old book by a Methodist evangelist by the name of Shaw, who said that several Methodist conferences in the United States were calling on all the members to pray for a new revival, worldwide revival, as the new century came on. So that was the state of mind of Christians as the 1900s came on. 1901, word came back from the Boer War. Do you know about the Boer War? The Dutch had settled South Africa, as the English had, and the English decided just to take their property. That was the usual attitude of the English. And so there was a war, and the Boers, that's the Dutch, were defeated. And in two separate POW camps in 1901, and I don't think there was any connection, there was a revival in each camp that converted every prisoner. Word came back to England and America, and people were saying, could this be it? And then Torrey, who is pastor of what we call the Moody Church, was led of God in a prayer meeting where his members said, Pastor, God is leading us to send you around the world on an evangelistic tour. They are called now the Torrey Alexander meetings all over the English-speaking world with thousands of converts. Is this it? No more questions in 1904. In 1904, the amazing explosion we call the Welsh Revival. That was so huge and so thorough. Those young evangelists who were praying for the country during that time of evangelism and revival asked God to give them 100,000 converts, and they got 100,000 converts out of about a population of about 2 million. But people who were there say it was many more than that, because the 100,000 were the ones who got converted and joined the churches. But more than likely, there was 150,000 church members that got saved. Quarter of a million people in a little more than a year. We've talked enough about it. This song comes from it. But I want to tell you, 1901 to 1912 was an era of worldwide revival, and nobody talks about it, but like we haven't seen since. Ever heard of Praying Hyde? Yeah, I've seen where he grew up, Praying Hyde. There's a great book called Praying Hyde. That's India, with thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of converts. I think in one place they saw 3,000 people saved and baptized like the day of Pentecost. India is not an easy field. But that was during this era. The Manchurian Awakening, 1908. The Korean Pentecost, 1907. Remember, I was in Korea for 12 hours for a layover. The guy with me, we were headed to Cambodia. The guy with me, smart, I'm not that smart, but he prepared for us to be there in that layover by getting a hold of missionaries in Seoul and giving us a chance to leave the airport and go in and visit the city of Seoul, Korea, which we did. And I'm going to tell you, you'd be surprised. I'm surprised. One third of the population of South Korea claims to be Christian. Not all of them are born again people, but how is it that a country that ought to be Buddhist is one third Christian? Did you know downtown Seoul, you'll see buildings all over with crosses on them, hospitals, schools, churches. An amazingly Christian nation. Matter of fact, a number of years ago, the largest evangelical church in the world was in Seoul. And really, I'm not talking about preachers or historians. You can go to Seoul and ask the question, how is it that this country is so Christian? And they would answer right back. The Korean Pentecost, 1907, 1 year. And most of these revivals started when people read about whales and said, would God do that here, including the USA? Not a thorough national revival, but if you go to your old newspapers and look up 1905, I found it where we live. I was doing some research. 1905, Bay City, Saginaw, Flint, large numbers of conversions. The word came back from Wales, would God do that here? And in different spots across the United States, phenomenal things happened. When I got here, this is what I do, I checked this area for revivals. During the 1905 period of revival in America, there was a place somewhere in Minnesota called Spring Valley. And word was 1/6 of the population was converted in a few months during that powerful time. You know, God is the same. He's the God of the book of Acts. He's the God of John 13 to 17. And one thing we know about God is he responds to prayer. Call unto me, and I will answer thee, and show thee great and mighty things which thou knowest not. And the great revival that we need today is available to us in answer to prayer. And the past tells us something about that. I'll say one more thing. People who know a whole lot more about statistics than I do can tell you how many people were converted on the mission field between 1901 and 1912, and it was phenomenal. But did you know, statistically, if we had a comparable era of revival now, we wouldn't be talking about millions. We'd be talking about a billion with a B. And there have been times when our spiritual forefathers saw a move of God through their witness that brought millions of people to Christ. But now, just to be equal in comparison, God would have to convert a billion people, which he is able to do.